everybody. My name's Matt, and I am an alcoholic. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be asked to speak in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no idea why people said that when I first came to a meeting. I really didn't. I didn't understand much of anything. In fact, my first meeting I went to, I was 25 years old, and I remember the first words I heard were God, and I was like, whoop, see you later, I'm out, I don't want nothing to do with any of this, at all. I don't want anything about some sort of religion, anything about God. I just want to get rid of my problems so I could get on with my life. And, you know, what I'm going to talk about is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And, you know, funny story, I generally call a few people every day. I talk to a couple alcoholics every day. It's part of my program. And I picked up the phone and I called Walt. I said, hey, Walt, what's going on, man? And Walt was like, oh, no, man, we're, you know, just hanging out. And he said, what are you doing on the 24th? And I was thinking, well, it's Friday. I don't think I got much going on. You know, we'll see what the kids got going on. And he said, do you want to speak? And, you know, the classic alcoholic mind stood in front of me and go, man, I don't want to have that conversation. You know, I go to bed at like 9 o'clock now. I might miss Blippi on TV or something. You know, anytime there's an opportunity to serve in this program, it's an honor. And I'm blessed to be able to be here today. Everything that I know has been given to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm learning a day at a time that I don't really know that much. And in fact, each day that goes by, I learn that, you know, more too will be revealed. And I've been taught these things because of the men that have come into my life. In fact, on the way here, I was talking to my very last sponsor in California. I grew up in Orange County, California. And that's where a lot of my story began, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about that. How I grew up was in a typical alcoholic family. It was okay to drink any day of the week, as long as you went to church on Sunday, and it was okay to behave however you wanted to. It was okay to yell, scream in the house, and you were to do as I say, not as I do. Today, I love and cherish my parents for what they tried to do for me. Because I understand the disease of alcoholism. My perception on reality was that everything was supposed to be great all the time, even as a kid. Like, I hated feeling sad. I just hated it. I thought everything was supposed to be utopia. And I was so afraid. You know, my life was so full of fear. Growing up, I remember I used to see my dad's car in the driveway, and I didn't know if he was going to be angry or sitting on the couch, drunk, passed out. I didn't know what to expect, and so I was terrified. And I learned very early on, at a very, very young age, how to lie. You know, I learned how to lie. And it worked for a very long time, but the problem was that people started seeing through those lies. And then you got to remember them and come up with a different one just to cover it up. So I had the disease of alcoholism at a very young age. All I needed was the ignition of ethanol. And when it says in the big book, I drank for the effect, I absolutely hated the taste of alcohol. Some people love it. I hated it. I thought it tasted like garbage. but I absolutely loved what it did for me. Absolutely loved it. At the age of 18, I moved to Las Vegas. I wanted to get away from the home front. I thought, this is my great escape, you know? I can finally do what I want to do. I don't have to be yelled at. I got total freedom. And little did I know, I was going to get a doctorate in alcoholism, even though I did graduate with a bachelor's. I soon began my journey of where I am today. I was terrified of rejection. You know, but at 18, I was scared of everything. I didn't like how tall I was. I always felt out of place, even when I did sports. And it was weird. I couldn't explain it. You know, I had this mental block, right? And the thing that I found out was that people would like me if I acted like all crazy, you know, in college at 18. I could fit in. I'm one of the cool cats. So what did that for me was when I took that first drink. I found out that I could drink like anyone, anytime, and drink them under the table. And I thought that was a rite of passage. You know, if you were puking or passed out on the ground, you were a loser, man. Like, keep going. I found out over time that, you know, that was progressive. So my story does include other things. I'm going to keep it to alcohol because this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But I can tell you that no matter what was there, I was into it. And it did not matter. So as I grew, as I got a little bit older, by the time I was about 24, I was graduating. And I started to see people like move on. Like they were actually getting jobs and starting to have families and all this stuff. And I'm like, what losers? Why are they doing this, man? Like, you know, we're still in our 20s. Like, we got to get good and get done, you know? Like, why would you go out and get married at 24? Like, you just freaking weird. So I kept going. I wanted to, as I was telling Steve earlier, I wanted to be a physical therapist coming out of school. That was my dream. And I wanted to do it because I do love people. I do love working with people, especially with injuries, and I love sports. And one thing that's ironic in sports is that, for example, you know, muscle training, you got to walk through pain. And it's an incremental level. So you don't start off like doing free weights from an injury. You start off at the very basic level of maybe even doing light stretches, having someone do that. And then it's progressive, right? So you go to balance and then you go upward and upward. It's a progression. As I go on in this discussion, recovery is either progressive or it's regressive. It's never still. And it's something that I've kind of learned over time, that the disease is always waiting. And that's why I'm here tonight. You know, I was always told never say no to an opportunity to serve. That's what was taught to me. Like I said, the things that I know today are everything that was given to me for the men that have planted the seed to get me here. So by 25, I graduated college. I moved back home. My parents allowed me to live in their home and do the things that I was doing and kept allowing me to live in their house. So I got my first job. It was about $45,000 a year. Was not grateful for a cent of that. Thought they owed me more money. And, you know, just was mad. I was mad that I was back living at home. Hated my life. I was so angry and miserable. I kept going and going and going, trying to change outside circumstances. Change jobs. Try to get people in my life, find love. You know, I used to think all these things are going to fix me. And, you know, was a liar, a thief, and a cheat. I went from job to job to job. And finally, I moved back out to Vegas after a little while because I couldn't take it living at home. And that's when things really, really got bad. I went from, you know, going to bars and doing that because I had a little money in my pocket to to drinking pop off vodka in a garage and, you know, putting stuff up my nose. That time was absolutely miserable. And I remember calling my dad. You know, this is the classic story of an alcoholic, right? I'm in trouble, so who am I gonna call? You know, I'm not calling Ghostbusters, I'm calling Dad and Mom again. hey Dad, you know, I'm kind of messed up. I think I need to come home. You know, Dad, of course, you know, allowed me to come back home, but I didn't change. And so that started my first journey to rehab. 25 years old, I had my first stint in rehab, and of course, a good rehab center will introduce you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my very first meeting was a Big Book Men's Stag meeting in Riverside, California. As about, typically, it's about 50 men. It is a very large, tight-knit group, and they showed me what it was like to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me, you're going to be a greeter. They said, I want you to shake everybody's hand, and I want you to get names and phone numbers. And I looked at them like, what is this all about? And they're like, do you tie your shoes with the right one starting first? I'm like, I guess. Okay, tie the left one first. You know, and live and let live. And sit down, and you know what? Put the cotton in your ears, or put the cotton in your mouth. Take them out of your ears, put it in your mouth. You know, today I love those guys, man. They were so willing to tell me the truth. And, you know, I can't repay Alcoholics Anonymous enough for the people that sacrificed time and willingness to tell me the truth. Because I was the last person to ever want to admit that. So, I did my first stint in rehab. I always felt comfortable in rehab, right? Because I started getting antsy right when it was towards the end. Because then it meant, oh no, life is going to happen now. See, I thought when you get sober, like all magically, life is going to be great. And everything's going to be better. All will be utopia. Wrong. So, subsequently, I spent two more times in rehab. In between those times, you know, the classic insanity of, you know, taking a trip, not taking a trip. I found the love of my life. She had a month of sobriety, and I had about 60 days, you know. There was a reason why old-timers said, you have nothing to offer anyone. Don't even think about anything in your first year.
Okay.
Oh, man, I love it. needless to say, I ended up back at my dad's house in Arkansas. I go, Dad, I messed up. Can you come get me? I'm sorry. How many times did I say sorry to my mom and dad? I can't even count. In fact, you know, I was talking to my mom the other day, and I told her I was speaking, and she said, "Oh, honey, good luck on your speech." And I laughed so hard. It's like, you know, my mom's been to tons of meetings with me and my dad, and I'm like, "Mom, there's no grade in this thing, you know. I'm not getting a scorecard, you know. I don't have to be the best. I just have to be me, and my story is mine." And so we laughed, and I said, "This disease does not leave me. You know, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic." And I had to find that out the real hard way. The real hard way. And my story doesn't have to be yours. You know, I was a revolving door for years. For years. It is the absolute worst feeling in the world to be sitting at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting dying to get out of my seat and go get a drink and be thinking about it while I'm at a meeting. Be so miserable. You know, I'm doing it to please my parents or maybe to get the job back, but I'm just thinking about drinking, man, and it is terrible. I wouldn't even want to go to him and be like, "Why even go, man? Just go get done and then come back." After my third stint in rehab, it was weird. You know, my dad was always the one to say, you know, we're going to try to keep him out of trouble. And it kind of shocked me, you know. People start getting a little angry at you after a while. They start getting tired of your stuff. So my dad wasn't too happy when I was in rehab the third time. In fact, he said, "Don't come home." So I started, went to rehab, and then I started going into sober livings. Subsequently, got kicked out of a few because I made the decision to go drink. And just did not have a clue what anything was about. I mean, was just lost. I finally ended up, of course, my parents took me back one more time, right? Finally ended up back there and made the decision that I wanted to try this thing. So I got a sponsor, Bobby D in California. I started working with Bob. At that point, you know, there was times that I had 6 months, 9 months, 60 days, 1 week, 1 day, in and out, in and out, in and out for years. I had over a year of sobriety at that time, and I was working the steps with Bob. At that time, I also had met Kelsey, who's my now wife. And she lived in Florida at that time, and we dated long distance. It was the first time I decided that I actually wanted to get to know someone. I didn't want to have physical contact with them. I wanted to actually get to know them. And so we were talking and dating, and I had, you know, over a year, and then eventually Kelsey made the decision to move to California, and we moved in together. This is my experience. When things became more important to me than Alcoholics Anonymous, I went out. Nothing is more important to me than my sobriety. And if I think something needs to come in front of that, I'm in trouble. So when Kelsey moved to California, I thought that I didn't have time for Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. I was single before that too. And made excuses not to do anything. I do like in the big book where it says that chapter into thinking. It's a good one. You guys should look for it. This program is about action. Knowledge, for me, means nothing unless I apply it to my life and how I live it. So, as I was saying earlier, I started living with Kelsey, and I didn't know how to do anything, and I was stopped going to meetings, you know, stopped talking to the sponsor. It's all the clear signs of on your way out. It's us as alcoholics, we know it and we see it. And I remember I called Bobby D after I had gone out, and you know, some of my earlier sponsors, one that just picked up 39 years, I talked to him the other day. He told me this wise thing. He said, "Matt, I can't help you after you go out and drink. You might want to call me before you think about doing that." What? No way. So, Bobby D decided to tell me something that I desperately needed to hear, but absolutely did not want to at that time. He said, "Man, I want you to come over." And I said, "Okay." So I get to his house, and we're sitting upstairs, and I can see Bobby D right now. He's got his guitars, and California dude, and he looked at me, and he said, "Matt, I absolutely don't know what to do with you. You know, we've been working together, and I don't know if I can sponsor you anymore. And you're gonna blank and die from this disease. You're not okay. You're not well. And you need help." I took that as Alcoholics Anonymous is just a bunch of old, angry people who were just like my dad, but they weren't drinking. He was showing me love, tough love. And I absolutely thank him every time I talk to him, including on the way here when I'm sitting in my car outside. I was just thinking about him, and I've always been told if you're thinking about someone, you need to call him. So I was just thinking about him, like, Bobby D, man. And funny enough, I start talking about his dog. And I said, "I think dogs are like the closest thing to God there is." And he said, "That's funny. What's dog spelled backwards?" God. I was like, "No way. I guess you learn something new every day." But from that point on, after meeting with Bobby D, I decided that the little green plant, you know, I never really got in trouble with that too much. So I decided that being the great state of California, that was a reputable plan. So I was living with Kelsey. I was lying every single day. I hid it underneath my car. I would take out the trash, make excuses to get in fights. I would get in my car. I would do it at work. Every single ounce of my energy went to that and how I could get it and get more of it. I was in complete insanity, and was spiritually dead and lost and did not believe that Alcoholics Anonymous worked. Come April 20th, 2017, my sobriety date. I walked in and Kelsey was the first person that I told everything to. Maybe even told a little too much, but I was willing to go all the way. Us alcoholics have a great way of finding great women. She believed in me. She believed in my program. She trusted me. I walked in and she looked at me and she said, "You give me one reason why I should stay with you, or you know what?" And the first time in my life, I said something that even shocked me. I said, "I don't know why. I don't have a reason why you should stay around." Of course, I then was like, did I just say that? Did I really just say that? And of course, we had a long argument. And I remember sitting in the mirror. And at that point, Kelsey was about 5 months pregnant with our daughter, Caroline. She was throwing up every morning, couldn't hold down anything. I was so self-centered. I remember we went out to a nice steak dinner for Valentine's Day. I was like, "Yeah, let's go." Yeah. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, "She better keep that steak down." That's an expensive steak, man. Did I have an ounce of thought for anyone else and how I made them feel? Absolutely not. The only person I ever cared about was Matt and what Matt was getting. I cried. I remember that night, I looked in the mirror and I didn't like the person that I saw in the mirror. And I begged God to give me one more chance. Let me try to do this one more time. Because I got nothing left. I was in and out for so long and struggled. But I kept coming back. That's what this program is about. You keep coming back a day at a time, because once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. My program today is still a day at a time. I don't look past that. I don't look past that. And so at that moment, I made a decision. I was at that turning point, that fork in the road, that psychic change that talks about in the big book. That phrase by Herbert Spencer always gets me. We used to read that every time at the men's stag meeting. Contempt prior to investigation. I needed that pain to figure out the question, why not try this? Everything. Just do what they say. Do it a day at a time. Get a sponsor. Get a home group. Get a commitment at the home group. Be of service. Unity Recovery Service. Work the steps with your sponsor. You know, all these things that were given to me. And so I remember I went to a meeting the next day, and funny enough, like where I was working, it was right around the corner, you know? I started laughing myself. Alcoholics Anonymous, right around the corner where I'm working. And I remember I just break down, like, I don't know what I'm doing, man. I'm going to be a dad, and I'm terrified to be a dad. I don't even know how to live. You know? I don't have any skills. Don't even know how to keep a job. Lived off the state of California for a long time. I thought that was a good idea. You know, they paid me handsomely. Funny enough, that first sponsor that I had, he helped me, who's got 39 years now, he was helping me get a job when I was in sober living. And I distinctly remember this. We laugh about it today. The offer came back to me. Of course, I was living off the state of California. And I remember saying this, yeah, I don't think I could take the job. You know, I just don't think it's quite enough money. Like, really? Really? You're living off the state of California and you're not going to take this job that's paying you a decent wage? Nah, that's not enough. Right? Everybody owed me everything. Right? Grandiose, immature, and irresponsible. That was the definition of me. So, fast forward a little bit. I was just attending meetings when I was in California. I was just going to meetings. I was desperate enough to know where I had to go over the years of going in and out. And we made the decision that California was going to be kind of a rough place. And, you know, Kels had her family here in Suffolk, Virginia. So, you know how they say don't make any major changes your first year? That might mean don't move 2,000 miles away from home, have a child, get married, all of the above, you know? But I was willing to just throw it on the line and come right in and jump right in when I got here. And, woof, baby. I moved in with my mother-in-law and father-in-law. Awesome. They did not know Matt Spillman. They did not know Matt Spillman was an alcoholic. Yeah. So let's just say, you know, my first year was an extreme learning experience, to say the least. And I remember meeting with Steve. I say this all the time, and I thank Steve for it. I remember when we sat down, he said, "Matt, come on, let's get coffee." And I remember I was talking about my mother-in-law. I'm like, "God, man, it's terrible. You know, she's always giving me the evil eye, you know, like just doing little things, locking doors. And when I come home from meetings, the door's locked. And so I know she's doing it on purpose. She knew it." And Steve looked at me and he said, "Matt, I would not like you either." And I was like, "Come on, man. I'm doing the right thing. I'm going to meetings. I got a sponsor. I'm working the steps. Now, what was told to me and what I understand now is let the program speak for itself. Let your actions show. Let the changes in you be shown. And so, you know, I had a rocky start when I got here, and it was challenging, man. One of the hardest things for me to do is to learn how to stay, right? Learn how to stay uncomfortable. It was weird because during sports growing up, I could endure pain. I loved it. I used to box. I ended up doing MMA, stuff like that. And that didn't bother me. But what did was the small stuff that tripped me up, man. It was like, you know, the littlest thing would just set me off. And so I had no understanding that this was a disease that centered in the mind. And I had this fear of everything. Just so afraid. Um, I ended up, you know, putting my mother-in-law on my 8-step, and I want to talk a little bit about my amends with some of these people. When I met with her, I sat down with her at our now home. It's weird, you know, my whole life I've always anticipated like the worst result because I know better than God, right? You know, I know what the outcome's going to be. I'm in a dangerous spot if I start thinking like that. Started talking and, you know, I did that thing that was told me to say, you know, like, how can I right my wrongs? She looked at me and she said, Matt, I did plenty wrong. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I can't do anything? She said, no. She said, just treat my daughter well. The amends that I made that I thought were the most difficult ended up being the most magical. I tell this one in particular because I'm a father today and God gave me that opportunity. I put my parents through absolute terror, okay? I did a lot of my drinking and other things in hotel rooms, motel rooms. They weren't like, you know, it wasn't even the motel, hotel, Holiday Inn. You know what I'm saying? It was like worse than Motel 6, okay? They were bad. I wasn't going, you know, to Newport Beach to hotels, all right? My mom used to sit at her desk crying at work, thinking I was dead somewhere. My dad would be up all night searching, trying to figure out where I was. Me as a father today, can't imagine what that feels like. You know, and I think about my kids today and what that was like for my parents. When I sat down with my mom, she said these words that just tore me apart. I said, Mom, how can I right my wrongs? Like any good mother. She said, I just wanted you to be happy. I couldn't even stop but start bawling. Alcoholics Anonymous gives me a life today that I never imagined when it talks about being rocketed to the fourth dimension. I had absolutely nothing when I moved here to Suffolk, Virginia. No job. Owed state taxes to California. Because I accidentally forgot to take out taxes. Oh well, my job. was going to be a father and absolutely terrified me. I couldn't take care of myself. How am I now going to take care of a child? And certainly didn't have a relationship with any God of any understanding and therefore couldn't have a relationship with anyone else. The steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has been a process and continues to be a process of ego deflation for me. It gets me right-sized, and that's what the old-timers were doing for me by telling me the truth. the depths that I went to, the soul sickness that I had that I didn't realize, got to levels where at 29 years old I had a stroke. But that didn't stop me. I would sell drum sets. I would sell whatever I had. I would sell my soul and everything that I have, including myself, to fix me, what I thought was everybody else was the problem. So I'm going to take it into my own hands and fix it. Today I get to have men in my life that give me direction, that tell me the truth, and ask, okay, Matt, so what's your plan? What step are you working? Huh? Here's a suggestion. Why not try this? And I'm like, God, did I really just call you for a reason? Thanks for telling me the truth, darn it. I was just calling you to get a pat on the back, and now you're telling me the truth. Yeah. Don't we always do that? We call someone up because we got something going on, and then we're just, oh, it's okay, you know, you'll be okay. So what step are you working? That was always, you know, that first big book meeting I went to, the stag meeting. They didn't want to hear situations or, you know, things there.
So who you working with?
You don't want to hear what's going on? No. Who you working with?
Did you get to a meeting? Did you pray? Did you do your readings? No. Well, then that's why you got drunk. Duh.
It's a simple program for complicated people. Trust God, clean house, help others. Used to hear it all the time. It's like, you know, Bill and Dr. Bob were geniuses. They wrote these chapters like how it works into action. You know,
don't try to change it, Matt. You're not that smart.
Guys used to, they would look at me and they're like, you won't make it. You're too smart. But, you know, today I could say, I do this program a day at a time. You know, I have a sponsor, I have a home group. And what it's like today, I'm a father of 3 children. Not one of my children has had to see me drink, take a drink, change how I feel. I'm an employee and a trusted one. I have friends in the program that I could call anytime, anywhere. I have friends outside of the program. Learning how to be a loving husband, learning how to show love to other people and be considerate of them. These are things that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are teaching me how to live and continue to do that. I'm blessed to be alive. Because at that point that I was at, it was either two ways. I was either going to jump right in or I was going to jump out. And if you haven't heard talks like that in Alcoholics Anonymous about suicide, that's quite common. I've seen a lot of people die from this disease. It's a very powerful and it's very cunning and baffling. And I know it because I've lived it. And I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope with all of you. If anybody can tell you they love you today, I sure the heck do. Thanks.